up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This edition of the Rogues Gallery here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here, along with Kendall Sinn in the studio.
Good afternoon, evening.
And joining us by phone, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And from Fort Worth, Texas, by Google, Mr. Jeff Hackworth. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey.
And we're going to be talking, I think we're going to spend a majority of this session, because last time we did not get to talk about Gotham.
We skipped over Gotham last time.
Yeah, we did. And so we're gonna talk Gotham this evening. We're going to talk a little bit about Supergirl, a little bit about Suicide Squad, because there are some things developing there. We'll talk a little bit about Green Lantern. The comments that Michelle Rodriguez made, and
that is actually I've been out of the loop the last couple of days. That is actually news to me. I'm excited as
well. It's
with everyone else.
I
won't get too excited.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a little bit. Okay, so let's talk Gotham first. Jada Pinkett Smith on Live with Mike and Kelly a couple of weeks ago said that she had only been contracted for a year. She's not coming back to Gotham for season two. At this point, she doesn't think she's coming back for season two. There is an option. Apparently, the way the contract is, they contracted her for a year with the option to pick it up. And she said on Live with Mike and Kelly that she's not coming back for the second season, which raises the question, is she going to die? Or is she just going to go away and we have the possibility that she shows up sometime later as a dun-dun-dun, you know, that kind of thing.
Of the last episode, where did we stand with her?
She is, she's on the island.
Okay.
Of Dr. Moreau. She's on the island of Dr.
The island of misfit toys, yeah.
Yes, Dr. Dolmacher. And she has agreed, she's made a deal with him.
By the way, this all happened very fast.
Yeah.
Her rise to power in this society that has apparently been going for a while has...
This whole storyline bothers me, just because it is so disconnected to everything else that's going on in the show.
Yeah, it seems like they threw it in there. It's filler.
It's like, what do we do with Fish? Her arc is done at the point where Penguin takes over the club and she's pretty much been tossed aside. So now what do we do with her? And it's almost like the writers, we mentioned the Dollmaker back here. Why don't we do something with that? And now we're in this whole thing with the island and the... Did any of you see the episode where... who played Wei-Yun on the... Jeffrey Combs.
Yes.
Jeffrey Combs is playing the assistant to Professor Dollmacher. And he apparently has disappointed Dr. Dollmacher and ends up
disappoint him
with his head on another person's body.
Mm-hmm.
That body being rather attractive female body. The special effects on that particular shot were so atrociously bad.
It was like 90s.
I'd say it was worse than that. I've seen films with better visual effects.
It was a Full Moon Productions level of quality there. No, it was. Maybe they were just, you know, making a reference to some of Jeffrey Combs' previous movies. Maybe they were. It was an homage.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, homage. As a reanimator shot?
Yes, yes. Which is brilliant casting.
I think you may have jumped the shark more than once when you've gone to the head transplant stage.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, once you get to that point.
I tell you, I'm a breath away from giving up on Gotham entirely.
That's really strange, because that was, you know, going in, you know, that was a pretty... That show started really strong.
Well,
and if they would stick to what works, which is Gordon and Bullock... If they stuck to that.
The crime stuff.
Yeah, if they actually stuck to what, you know, all of CBS's programming has stuck to for years, they would be doing just fine. But they haven't. They've all of a sudden wanted to make this really dark show, which of course it can still be dark, but it does not need to get into science fiction territory with this. I mean, Batman doesn't live in the science fiction realm. It doesn't need to go full Reanimator. Let's just, you know.
No, yeah, Batman's always been one of those really grounded villains.
Yeah, I find it. They really went.
Well,
I don't know. Let's just kill off Fish and be done with it. Now, don't you remember? She had some interesting moments there. I mean, with the, she officially kind of became kind of badass with the
sure.
eye popping out. And...
But the question then though really for me is, once Fish Mooney's arc is done with Penguin and Maroni and Falcone, why didn't they just kill her there? Or when she gets on the boat and she goes away, why isn't that the end of Fish Mooney's story? We don't have to have her in every single episode.
No, she's just there out of contractual reasons.
But you know what I was really hoping to see? When she got on the boat and she's on this, you know, she's on this little luxury liner yacht, right? I was so hoping to see Commodore Schmidlap. Just for a wink, you know.
That would have been really funny.
It would have been. It would have been.
You guys
hilarious.
Are gonna have to refresh my memory on this one, and for the audience who I'm sure probably doesn't remember.
Who
Commodore Schmidlap is the Penguin alter ego in Batman the movie
from 1966. Batman 66. Wow. You know the movie
wow.
where Catwoman and Riddler and Penguin and
are
Joker
on
all
on the boat.
Up. Commodore Schmidt, the real Commodore Schmidlap, owned a boat, and he owned a device that made things invisible. It was a holographic projector that made things invisible. It was a secret thing he was developing for the Department of Defense.
Well, it also rehydrated and dehydrated people.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't the cloaking device. That was Penguin's thing. The cloaking, Jeff is right. It was a thing that reduced a person down to his molecular dust. Every one of them's got a mother. I remember that line.
I didn't get this reference, and for a moment I would just like to let everybody in the audience know that we have just gone full nerd. Full nerd. When you are referencing the 1966 Batman, you have gone full nerd. An obscure character.
Well, that's true. Yes, that is Jeff's
your
main,
you have the backstory down.
Well, the thing is when the expectation that we're going Commodore Schmidlap, I was fully expecting the silly to begin, because it was like, what are we doing with Fish?
Yeah,
you know, the ship gets hijacked, she gets kidnapped.
And then of course all of a sudden the show did get really violent, and I remember it. Very specifically, simply because, you know, my wife and I, this is a show that we watch after the children are in bed. And my daughter had woken up and she came down and, you know, she came down and she wanted to cuddle and stuff like that. And we're watching Gotham. And Sally literally looks at me and she's like, well, this show's probably okay and stuff like that. I mean, as soon as she says that and Georgie kind of turns, like the eye pops out. And I mean, Sally just barely caught her in time.
Oh.
And I'm just like, oh, I can't trust you, Gotham.
Well,
and then she steps on it too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then she steps on it.
Well, see, and I was fully expecting her to go eye patch, you know, because you know, let's do Nick Fury. Why not?
And then the double eye thing, you know, the different colored eye. It's like,
well,
come on, guys. Just
well,
kill her off.
It made me wonder if and Tim, you can jump in on this one here, because I don't know. And I don't know if Kendall, if you'll know, is there a character? Is there a dual colored, dual eye color character that Fish Mooney could be in the process of becoming?
I really don't think so. Nothing that stands out.
Element Girl.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? I don't know. You know, now that her main story is done, I'm just sitting there. Was Fish Mooney even necessary to this whole show at all?
No, not, well.
She served the purpose of being a new conflict for our villains. That does not, I mean, there had to be at least one character on the show that wasn't, you know, oh, look, it's the younger version of this character from the comic book.
Right.
Yeah.
And there you have it.
She's, you know, a star. You know, stuff like, I mean, I understand why she had a 1-year contract. You know, it's like, hey,
right.
You know, you've done movies and you're married to Will Smith at the time. And you know.
Are they not married anymore?
They're getting divorced, aren't they?
Are they?
Isn't that, I remember seeing something like that come across the news.
Have not seen that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no idea.
I don't look at TMZ.
Oh, you think they're good?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up in the break.
Yeah, in the break, we'll look that up.
Next
on TMZ.
I mean, to me, Jeff, you got a point there for her being a stepping stone for Penguin, you know, to start his rise, because somebody has to be, you know, he's got to be taking somebody's place, mm-hmm. and we know that Falcone and Maroni are still around by the time Batman shows up. So I guess Fish is a functionary character that just serves a particular purpose, and now we get out of the way.
I would think that's kind of how I view it. I mean, she's introduced all of the characters. We kind of looked at it through her eyes.
Speaking of Penguin, this is something that's been bothering me since second or third episode. What happened to the kid he kidnapped?
Which I don't remember. Which kid? When did he kidnap the kid?
When he got up out of the water.
Uh huh.
You know, after Gordon pretended to shoot him, dumped him in the river, right? He gets up. He kills the guy for this fish sandwich, and then he's on the road hitchhiking, and those two college kids in the SUV pick him up.
Yeah.
And he kills one of them right there with a beer bottle. And he kidnaps the other one. He ends up in the RV, remember? And he does the call, the ransom call. Oh, no, Mrs. So-and-so, I am very serious. She doesn't believe me. You must have been a very naughty boy, whatever his name is. And we never saw him again. He didn't turn up dead. He didn't turn up alive. That whole story thread right there just disappeared.
Maybe his mom gave him the money.
Thanks for ending that conversation with a very logical answer, Jeff. But no,
I don't know. Yeah, but from a story standpoint, they never there was no resolution. I mean, not even in, you know, a line of dialogue somewhere or something. But
yeah.
Nothing. That it just completely disappeared from the show.
Yeah, he just went away. You know, and it's funny because
maybe he's still waiting on the call.
Yeah, you never know. This is going to be like this is going to come back at some point.
They're playing the long game.
Yeah, they're playing the long game on this one.
That one and Barbara Keene.
Yeah. Where's she going?
Good night. Well,
and I don't care.
Well, see, she's back and she's getting dating advice from Kat.
Which is amazing.
Just stupid.
That's so gross.
And she just just happens to walk in on Jim and Leslie. In the locker room, where
what are the odds?
Yeah, I mean, come on,
it's one of those things where something like that happens, and all of a sudden you are reminded, oh yeah, I'm watching a TV show.
Yeah,
it's like, oh yeah, these things happen. It's a TV show.
I still think that Barbara Keene is useless.
Agreed.
Does anyone want to give the show the benefit of the doubt and say long game? On that one,
that's a heck of a long game. You know,
it's
what
a horrible long game, and I want their long game to die. But
I want the season finale to give me a Barbara Keene payoff that is so exceptionally surprising and shocking, and you never see it coming, or I'm done with the show. I mean, it's just a complete waste of my time to watch Barbara Keene.
Okay, so here we go. The two biggest wastes of time: Fish Mooney, Barbara Keene.
Fish Mooney passed. The takeover.
Yeah,
attempt.
Past the takeover.
Yeah, and Barbara Keene.
So what? What's our?
And we haven't even seen Montoya and Alan. When's the last time we saw them?
They haven't come up. And Alan is so. I don't really much care for. Look, they made Montoya and Barbara Keen just the most two annoying characters on the show, and you know they could tell that people just don't want to watch them.
Right.
As a side note, Alan gets thrown out the window.
Well, the problem that I have with that is not your analysis, but what they're actually doing with the characters is that there were several places in the stories that have been going on with Gordon where the Special Crimes Division should have been, the Major Crimes Unit should have been involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm sitting there going, where's Montoya and Alan? You know, are... Do we
I thought
have
they
to
were
have...
relentlessly pursuing him.
Exactly. Right. Well, any of them, you know, they jump on any kind of case with, you know, they're supposed to be the honest cops. Well, where are they?
Yeah. And here's another concern that I have, and this is, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here.
No, go ahead.
Do that. Is, it's a DC, so we have to talk about tangents. Riddler, I am concerned that we are getting too much exposure to an annoying Riddler, so that by the time he goes full villain, we don't care. You know what I mean? Like I'm a little concerned about that storyline. Like this whole him chasing after Kringle is just getting old. I mean, come on. I mean, I know we're making a fan service show here, but don't show us nerds what it's like to get turned down by the cute girl. We've seen that our entire lives.
Who do you think who do you think Miss Kringle is going to turn out to be?
You know, Sally and I kind of sit there. You know, everyone wants to say Harley Quinn. You know, it's like that's what you hear all the time, and that would be cool. But there was another. There seems like there's another. Who's the other Harley Quinn nominee on the show? There's another one that someone on the show that were like, oh, that might be a Harley Quinn.
Well, you had Liza was there for a while, but she's dead now.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking.
The blonde that was supposed to be seducing Falcone and ended up liking him. But she's dead.
It seems like there was somebody else as well. But Kringle would make the most sense. I mean, that's reaching. I mean, that's reaching, but then it's not...
See, the thing
is... silly to have her give her backstory with the Riddler.
Yeah, well, I mean, even then, I mean...
But I mean, hell, we've got a Fish Mooney, so I mean, it's not like
I don't know that whole thing. It just seems like and Tim and I have talked about this in other places. You know, where the story is important. You get really good writing and that kind of thing. But if you have a character you don't know what to do with, the writing just kind of goes limp and wherever it goes. And I think that's what's happened with Fish, and I think that's what's happened with Nygma. Because they introduce him, and he's all riddles all the time now anyway, and he's eccentric and weird and strange and crazy, and he's just one foot away from full-on villain Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
But the show can't do that yet.
Yeah.
It's like these guys, you know, Penguin's got plenty of time to develop into a crime lord and, you know, the big ice, you know, ice restaurant, you know, the ice lounge and
iceberg lounge.
Iceberg lounge, thank you. You know, he's got plenty of time for that. That is going to take time. We all can understand that. For Riddler now to be here and already be that close to being Riddler,
15 years before Batman's going to show
up. Yeah, and he can't, they can't do anything with him. It's like, well, he can't be a villain yet. Now what are we going to do?
I don't know. All I know is let's fix the show, and I think that the best scene in the last few episodes has been, I won't say the best scene, but one of the most interesting is the scenes with Gordon, Bullock, and Dent. You know, when they were trying to get that information and stuff like that. That was good crime show TV.
One thing that bothers me about Gordon confronting Commissioner Loeb is we've had all of this time where Gordon is refusing to play the game.
Mm-hmm. And then it just all of a sudden he starts playing the game.
Yeah. Okay, when we get back, we'll talk Suicide Squad, we'll talk Supergirl, and other stuff when the Rogues Gallery continues. Stand by.
This is Sci-Fi Pony Radio.
We know you like the distinguished competition, so you probably also have an interest in the House of Ideas. We have a podcast for that, Level 117, where we talk Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. We also discuss the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. We gather in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters for recap, analysis, and discussion with a few digressions along the way. No matter what your security clearance, you will be able to listen to our show, Level 117, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
We are vengeance. We are the night. We are Sci-Fi for Me.
Back on the Rogues Gallery, Jason Hunt here along with Jeff Hackworth in Fort Worth.
Hello.
And Tim Harvey in Parts Unknown.
Well, I know where I am.
And Kendall Sin here in the studio with me.
I'm still here.
And Jeff has a theory about Gotham. Let's get that here, and then we will move on to Suicide Squad.
Yes.
So, Jeff, you have a theory about Gotham and Ra's al Ghul. What is that?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know how we had Alfred's friend come along,
Reggie,
and we don't really know much about him,
right?
Yeah, well, he's a drifter, you know, and he kind of trained Bruce in the episode to fight, and he also betrayed Alfred,
right?
So I'm thinking maybe after he leaves, he's still starting up the League of Assassins. And Bruce could want to get revenge on him later.
You think Reggie is Ra's al Ghul?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh.
Sorry, I just bumped the mic.
Yeah. See, if they wanted to do this the right way, they would use the same actor from Arrow.
But it's a multiverse.
I know, but that would be your moment where, you know, everyone's head explodes.
Yeah.
That would be a great thing to do. They're not going to do that, but
just throwing it out there.
Well, it's in the universe. We broke the news here first, folks. When it does happen, if it doesn't happen, move along. Nothing to see here.
Well, I think. I don't know. Reggie doesn't strike me as being that kind of a stealthy assassin so much. He seems more like the blunt object you hit somebody over the head with. Alfred's got the finesse. Reggie doesn't. In terms of style, you know, because Reggie's one of those things. You walk up to a guy, you punch him in the nose. And
yeah, he's more rough and tumble.
Yeah, exactly. And Alfred is more the, you know, walk up behind him and shank him.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I don't know.
Maybe Ra's is a bit more hands-on.
Could be.
But you know what, you could actually, if you really wanted to play with something, then you could sit there and you'd have that moment when you're expecting the rough and tumble, blunt object kind of approach, and then suddenly it's, you know, this incredibly refined, very stylized, you know, unexpected, you know, because that's how you yank the rug out from underneath the audience,
right?
Is you reveal a completely different side of the character than you ever saw before.
Right.
I don't know that they would actually go that way, and I honestly don't trust the show to go that way, because I think the big fear that we all had from the beginning, which is, oh, look, they're going to cram the entire Bat Universe into this TV show.
Before we have Batman.
Not only has come true, but also it has hamstrung them so bad by even just trying to put these characters in there and finding a place for them. And then, Barbara could have been a really cool character.
She could have at least been somewhat interesting.
She could have been a fantastic character, so that when the inevitable collapse of their relationship happens,
right,
which it has to happen for Jim Gordon's story, it would have hurt the audience.
Yeah.
And now, if she leaves and never comes back, everyone's going to go
party time.
Well, see, the problem that I have with the whole Barbara Gordon thing is with Jim involved with Leslie Tompkins, at some point that has to have some sort of demise, and he's got to figure out how to get back with Barbara. So how do you motivate that story when you have such a weak character? I mean, yeah, she's pretty, but that doesn't help story. You know, Erin Richards may be one of the greatest actresses on the planet, but we haven't seen that yet because she hasn't been given crap to do.
And she tried on a lot of dresses in an episode.
And did you notice?
We're not going to get that far.
The show's
not going to last that long.
No, that's true.
There's no way for the show to last that long. I would be, and I don't know, I honestly haven't looked at the numbers. I really don't know what the actual ratings are for this thing.
Yeah, it's already been renewed for season two, though. We know that.
I can't see it going more than another year if they don't figure out what they're doing. Because they can't figure out if it's a camp show, and it can't figure out if it's
they either will. I agree. They'll either figure out what they're doing, or it'll be done after two seasons.
I want to see the crime. I want to see the mob. That's the story that works.
That's a little bit more interesting.
The whole thing with Penguin and Falcone and Maroney, if you took that and ran with it for 5 years, I mean...
That could be interesting. I mean,
when people made the comparison, when the pilot episode came out and they said, oh, it's Law & Order Gotham.
Yeah.
That's what they should have done. They should have done Law & Order Gotham and focused on the crime, because that's the reason why... That's the foundation for why Batman shows up in the first place.
Right.
It's
the corruption.
Everything has just dwindled down into this
cesspool.
Wow. Exactly. Yeah. Look at that.
Also, we have not discussed the introduction of potential Jokers.
I think we've seen the Joker.
I think
Jerome is the. I mean, his because it was too spot on.
It was one of those things where I was like, "That can't be." But it confused me because the very next episode was the Red Hood gang,
right?
Which Jerome, I guess, could take over.
He could after he gets out because he's young yet.
Yeah,
he could do his time. When he gets out, he wants the prestige. He joins the Red Hood gang.
I don't know who the actor was or anything like that, but
his name is Cameron Monaghan.
The way they introduced him, I thought was great.
Yeah,
I like how they mixed a lot of origin stories into his, and his little reveal. Just as from an acting standpoint, his little reveal there, it was a little reminiscent of Edward Norton Primal Fear, of the way he did it, which is which was a fantastic performance, but that's kind of what it reminded me of, his little reveal there of like, oh, they caught me, time to let them know I'm crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so, I honestly, that got me really excited. What I hated was that then they cut to soap opera, Leslie Tompkins, Jim Gordon, Barbara Keene walking in on them.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, you hit such a high note right there for both fans and from just storytelling. It was decent.
Yeah.
The whole mystery thing, you know,
yeah,
that
the murder.
That wasn't that great. And it was kind of a silly way to figure out a clue. But
snake finder.
But you know, the writers had one thing on their mind. You know, let's get to the Joker, you know, and stuff like that. So they didn't really care about that, telling a real intricate mystery there. They're like, we know nobody's going to care about this as soon as he starts laughing.
Right.
And
spot on Nicholson. I mean, you've got a little bit of Heath Ledger, a little bit of Mark Hamill.
It was nice.
But it was mostly Nicholson.
He mixed
Nicholson.
In a lot of little things. Yeah. And kudos to the
really
casting
good.
Department. You know?
What, Jeff?
I said it was really good.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was, too.
And so,
they should have ended the episode with that.
Right there. I mean, seriously, if they could just get rid of the soap opera aspect. And I like Leslie Tompkins. If they want to continue that storyline, that's fine. She's relatively interesting. Let's not go too far with it.
I have with Leslie Tompkins is that they're using New 52 Leslie. And Leslie Tompkins, for me, is in her 50s with silver hair when the Waynes are murdered. And she's not in this one. No. And the whole relationship, I've seen what they're doing. They're taking the whole affair with Sarah Essen and putting it on Leslie Tompkins because Sarah Essen is the captain. I don't know why they did that. They could very, I mean, if they're going to tell this story, might as well tell it with Sergeant Essen.
I don't know bring her why in from they Chicago brought in Leslie there. Tompkins, other than New 52.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the There's Batman no reason story for her to in be New 52.
Because
so.
If you're going to tell the affair, tell the affair.
Yeah. You know?
But that only works if he's married to Barbara.
Yeah.
You know, for the full emotional impact, you know, that whole gut check of what exactly am I doing here? You know, I'm in a crazy town run by gangsters with corrupt cops, and I, you know, my wife's just given birth, and she's ready to leave me, and I'm having an affair, and what's going on, and what am I thinking here? That whole thing, and that's straight out of Batman Year One, but that comes much later in Gordon's story than what we're seeing here. And if the introduction, using Leslie to tell Sarah Essen's story, to me, it seems like, and oh, by the way,
yeah.
Oh, wait, yeah, we do have this story we can use. Oh, wait, we put Sarah Essen in charge. We can't use her. He can't have an affair with his captain, you know?
And, well, they're pretty much broken up anyway, so it's not like he's really cheating on her.
Right, right. So, yeah, so, and which goes back to what you were saying, Kelly, the whole thing being just soap opera at this point. It's all just angst.
Yeah, either way. I mean, it's kind of we're actually sitting here doing the exact same thing we're getting mad at the show for. Yep. We're spending so much time with characters that nobody cares about.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about Suicide Squad for a second. We've seen photographs of Jared Leto, and it looks like the Joker is going to have a very specific look. And this looks like a little bit like Dark Knight Returns Joker. Is what they're going for.
I had heard
Which
some
kind of bothers me a little bit, but
I had heard some rumors that they're kind of going with a lot of Dark Knight Returns type.
That
elements.
Wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me at all because that's what they're doing with Batman V Superman.
Yeah, and so, but the whole Dark Knight Returns thing, that you know, it means that Joker has been dormant for all these years, and damn, it's supposed to be a Superman movie, first of all. And so you're introducing a lot. Well, I mean, we're going to Batman versus Superman there.
Yeah,
but
Suicide Squad's not. I mean,
that's not
Joker,
in the same continuity.
Joker's,
but
as far as we know, Joker's not in the Batman V Superman.
Right.
As far as we know,
not in the same movie. Sorry,
it could show up. But yeah, but Suicide Squad. And now we've got our Rick Flag, and I think Joel Kinnaman is finally the one that they've picked. That's going to take that. And I hear Deathstroke is going to appear as well.
That would make sense.
Well, I hear Deathstroke is the quote-unquote main villain.
Oh, wait,
as
okay.
As opposed to, because the what they listed Onslaught as, which is an obscure group of villains from like three issues, like God only knows how many years ago, which nobody has heard of and is going to completely not sell any tickets if they're... And they're fighting Onslaught. Everyone's going to go, who?
Yeah.
And so, but now they're talking Deathstroke, which of course means, you know, you're pulling in the folks who love Deathstroke from Arrow to see a new version of Deathstroke and all this fun stuff. I don't know. You know, I keep seeing this stuff that says it's the Dark Knight Returns version of, and it's pretty much at this point, none of it makes I think it's a placeholder that doesn't mean anything.
I'll be completely honest. I'm just kind of freaked out about the whole DC playing catch up thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just playing catch up to Marvel and stuff. I mean, they're just putting a lot of carts in front of a lot of horses.
But they're not on television. They're
on television they're doing a fine job.
They're winning on television.
Yeah.
But still it's I want to have my cake and eat it too. You know,
oh, sure.
I mean, I want.
Yeah, well,
but see,
here's
the thing:
saw
if DC screws this up, they screw it up for Marvel as well.
I don't think so.
It's gonna bring an end to. I mean, eventually, this if they start spending a lot of money on these things, because those suits, they're gonna look at it and they're just gonna be like, "Oh, Suicide Squad tanked. We're not gonna give Civil War as much money. We're not gonna do this. We're not gonna do that." You know, people start to get a little bit scared.
I don't know. I'm gonna disagree with you. I don't think that they're gonna do it that way, because the relationship that the production side of things has with the comics side of things is different in the Marvel circumstance, because the Marvel model is the comic book company is making the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And on the DC side, you have Warner Brothers Pictures and Warner Brothers Television, each division taking on certain sections of the DC Comics properties. And so you've got more cooks in the kitchen, more thumbs in the pie on that side of things. And you have a number of people at Warner Brothers, especially over in the movie side of things, who don't understand what they've got. Whereas the Marvel side, you have people that are involved in the comics company itself.
Well, that's fine, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, because I think if the DC movies tank, then the public perception is going to be Marvel wins. And Marvel wins the day, and they get to make all the movies, and we'll go see all the movies, and they make $1 billion every time.
But if you put any, the chinks are already starting to show in the armor. Like, look at the Oscars. Hollywood has started to become the Hollywood artsy fartsy types are really mad about superhero movies, and it just takes a little time before that starts creeping into consciousness, you know, because who among us ever thought that Arnold Schwarzenegger movies weren't always going to be amazing? You know, it's like eventually these things fall apart, and they fall apart because of overkill. And so when you have DC trying to catch up with Marvel, it doubles the amount of people paying for the same thing, and the difference is Marvel has been pretty consistent with the movies they've made. There's only been a few that I was like, meh. You know, like, each one has impressed me, but how Marvel has succeeded is by kept one-upping itself by saying, it's like, you know, you hear is like, they're going to do what? They're going to do an Iron Man movie? How's that going to work? And then it works. They're going to do what? They're going to do going to do Guardians of the Galaxy? How's it works?
I think the beginning of the Marvel approach was, we've got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which is what they did, you know, when it was like Firefly. When Firefly got canceled, they're like, okay, we've got nothing to lose. We can just go full bore and do whatever. And by the time Marvel gets to Guardians of the Galaxy, they have won so much.
Oh, they get to do whatever
they
want.
Street cred. Yeah, it's like you just slap Marvel on it and people will come see it.
Yeah, and what they're doing really smart is they're hiring very unique voices to do their stuff. And now they did do this also with Suicide Squad, though. You know, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's
David Ayer, I think.
Yeah, David Ayer. Very good. You know, very good writer and director and stuff who tells the kind of stories that you need to tell with a Suicide Squad movie.
Right.
So I'm very interested. I mean, but it's just, boy, they have a bad track record. And the only thing they've gotten right in the last decade is the Batman movies. And they've screwed up.
Which are not even in this continuity.
Which is not in this continuity. And I mean, in this decade, they've screwed up Superman twice. You know, so I have very little faith in what they're doing. As far as in the movies, and likewise, they're doing great on television, but we could see the bubble burst on that as well by trying to do too much. I mean, good grief, we don't have enough time to cover all these shows they're coming out with. I mean,
is why we're going to have to record more than one episode a month, I think.
Yeah, I mean, with the we've got Teen Titans, we've got the spinoff on CW that they're just like, well, you know, there's all this stuff. We got to play catch up.
And well,
we have to get all
and
these
it's
new
funny.
People.
I asked because I got the chance to moderate Stephen Amell's panel at Planet Comic Con this weekend, and I asked him. I said, "Are we going towards a TV Justice League with this spinoff and all of these heroes that have been introduced so far? Is it going to be a TV Justice League, or are we closer to something more like Justice Society or The Outsiders? I've heard The Outsiders bandied about it a lot.
The Outsiders would be cool.
And he said, I think we've pretty much got a Justice League team. It's just that it doesn't have the name.
Yeah.
And really, the impression that I got from him was the suggestion is that the new spinoff show is going to be a team show. Mm-hmm. Is not necessarily going to be like Brave and the Bold, where you have a main character team up with a different character mm-hmm. every week, like Batman did. But you're going to have a team, maybe Outsiders, maybe Justice League. I'm leaning toward Outsiders. And that's going to be that show. But it really surprised me because you know, they were asking Robbie Amell if he was going to be on that show because Victor Garber's on that show. Well, is Firestorm going to be there or not? Mm-hmm. And so far, Robbie can't say if he's going to be on the show or not, which does that mean he's on or he hasn't been talked to yet or what? But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. And then there's Supergirl.
Yeah, I'm...
At least they got the costume right, sort of.
Costume looks great.
It does.
I like her costume.
It's darker, but it works. Yeah. I mean, it looks so much like the one Helen Slater wore.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me... But again, you know, you're talking Greg Berlanti, who so far has
done a pretty good
track record. I mean, Smallville notwithstanding. But, you know, with everything else that they've done so far, you know, and Vixen is coming up, and that's on its way very soon.
There's just too much. It's one of those. It's overwhelming, all of this stuff that's out there.
Well, I don't know. Tim, you can probably address this a little bit more than I can. It seems like with film, we get cycles. In the 40s, we had the film noir, detective, romantic, detective, mystery type thrillers, the crime stuff. In the 50s, we had the Westerns, and you're talking, you know, a decade and a half before.
Westerns had a long run.
What were we looking at in the 60s? You know, the peace, love.
Your 60s were spy movies. Still Westerns. You had a lot of romances coming back. You had the big drama pictures. You started to see a little bit of horror creeping in again. But it was upscale horror. It was as much psychological. It was, you know, the 60s were the decade of Hitchcock. And then you get into the 70s and you had crime pictures. Well, 60s and 70s, you had crime pictures. And they weren't, you know, they were your
French Connection.
French Connections and your, you know, Serpico's and your things like that.
Well, and then you had the things like Kramer and Kramer and Ordinary People and all the soap opera movies.
You know, your dramas, your serious dramas, you know, serious films about serious people.
So how long do you think we've got before the superhero movie wanes?
How long before the bubble bursts? You think 10 years?
10 years.
You think 10?
Yeah, I think we've got 10 because you've got...
I'm saying 4.
Look at the way things are going, you're going to have a big tentpole superhero picture film out every year.
You're going to have 5 every year.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be one. There's going to be one that wins.
One massive
one that wins. Right? Yeah.
Right. And you know, I think the one that wins is actually going to determine the next one that wins too, because you're going to end up with the stuff if everyone goes to see the dumb one,
yeah,
the studio's going to make another dumb one.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how they work.
Well, and then you have to figure in what Star Wars is going to do to change all of this, because Episode 8 is going to come out in May.
They're going to have 2017. Well, I mean, Star Wars has already said there will be a new Star Wars every year.
Yeah, we're getting Rogue One next year.
Yeah, we already know what episode the next 8 one of is. That. Yeah.
Well, see, and that is that going to?
And not to mention, I mean, how many comics did Star Wars right now has a new comic come out every week?
Yeah.
They've got 3 titles out a week?
Well, and then you know you've got the books. You've got the books
I
all
can't
hitting
keep
in
up
August.
With all of it.
Yeah, but how much is the Star Wars stuff going to bolster the superhero stuff? Because they're all of a piece.
Or take away.
Here's what I think about the Star Wars stuff, because I think what's going to happen, we're either going to... I don't know if people are even going to think of it in the same terms. Because Star Wars is a creature kind of like unto its own self. I mean, it is... You know, there's Star Wars, and there's everything else.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that you're going to end up with... I think that if anything, you're going to see Star Wars maybe open the door for some more space opera stuff.
Like which the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Which would be, I for one grew up during that time. You know, it's like we were talking this weekend, you know, it was like, I didn't see Princess Bride until I was older. And they're like, why not? I was like, because it didn't have space in the title.
Yeah.
I was like, it didn't have Bandit in the title. It had nothing Odyssey, and it didn't have any of that in the title.
Well, and yeah,
I think that you're really going to see, this is a strange thing to say when talking about Star Wars, if it's successful.
Right.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I hate to say it as much as I want it to succeed, and for everybody who's involved, you know, and I talked to Jason a little bit about this when we were at a Comic-Con this last weekend, is where everyone is so excited about these sequels to films that are 30 years old and more.
Yeah.
But it
and
doesn't.
We're all just so jazzed about it, and Star Wars is special. Okay, there's no doubt about it. Star Wars is a thing unto itself. But, you know, we've got all of these folks, whether it's DC or Marvel, or Star Wars, or you know whatever they're doing for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, all of this stuff. All they really need is one just utter disaster.
Right.
Yep. And the whole thing comes crashing down.
Everything comes crashing, and everyone starts rethinking everything.
But I think Tim's right. I think superhero films, we've got at least another good 10 years on it.
I'm gonna say.
You're saying four.
I'm saying four.
Jeff, how long do you think superhero movies are gonna?
I'm going close.
I guess it's about 12.
See, I'm going Price is Right rules here, closest without going over. So remember that.
Well, now. Now, Jeff, why are you saying 12? Because we're going. I know we at least have a plan out to 2020 for DC and 2019, I think, for Marvel.
And I don't even think we make it that far. I don't think we make it to 2020.
Well,
I think some of those
2020
later
is
ones...
2020 is Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we may see it. Like it may come out, but by that time, I'm just talking like these movies may go
you
into
think
production.
Fatigue is going to set in
but
before
fatigue
that time
will set in, and
box office.
We also need to gauge how we're going to say that they're failing. Like, I don't know how to gauge.
It didn't make a billion. It tanked.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was only 900 million. Sorry.
But we don't even. It's funny because we don't even really need to have these big successes. We don't even. What sucks is they don't even have to be good movies because Transformers made. $1 billion.
Well, what gets me, and you maybe we might see, you know, as far as the longevity of the superhero films, maybe one of those things depends on the model that's kind of what Warner Brothers is going to do with Shazam, where New Line Cinema produces it for a smaller budget. And we get some superhero films, and it looks like, you know, it would be that way on the Warner Brothers side. We get some superhero films that are smaller budget, smaller productions, that have a better chance of making a lot more money. The profit margin is bigger.
Which I kind of think that that's a mistake, simply because if you take that chance and it's not as good, it's that bad apple.
Yeah,
is going to kind of sour the whole bunch there of the
but
other
remember,
ones.
You know, if we want to go back to Star Wars, if you remember, Star Wars was limited budget, limited resources, and a lot of what ended up on the screen was there as a result of we can't do that. We can't
ingenuity.
Do that. We can't do that. You find a way to come around the obstacles.
And I mean, stuff like that happens all the time. I just don't think it will happen in a superhero movie because when Star Wars came out, there was nothing else like it.
Right.
But how are you going to put Shazam up against Superman? You know, because the audience doesn't, the average audience doesn't care. They're not going to go in and say, well, I'm going to judge this movie a little less harsh. Yeah. Because I know that they only made it with half the budget that they had for Superman. No, they aren't going to say that.
But given the fact that we're getting really good flying effects on Flash on a limited budget like that.
We're getting good effects
on
Flash.
I think Shazam would do okay with a limited resource budget.
Hey, you know me, I'm all for if they want to focus more on story and less on special effects. I'm all for that.
Remember, we're talking about Warner Brothers.
But we're not going to do that. We're not going to...
DC movies.
I don't... I don't see the bubble burst or the bubble lasting 10 years. That's for sure. Now, Tim, back to your point about Star Wars. You know, yeah, it's a franchise that's 30 years old, but every time they release, and this is what, when did they release the first comic? Was it three months ago?
January.
And every single comic they release is in the, you know, is the top comic of that week.
Yeah.
You know, and it's every month. It's, I mean, it's just destroying. I don't have a comics chart in front of me, but I know last time I looked is like every title they have not only is ahead of any superhero title, but it is miles ahead mm-hmm. of any superhero title. And so there's no, the cool thing, and this is something that we have to worry about now with Star Wars is fatigue. Because I'm already fatigued because I feel an obligation to go out and read all the comics, all the books, all the and see all the movies and the TV shows and stuff.
So because far, now it's all canon.
Yeah, it's all canon, and it's fascinating, and it's awesome. And I personally have loved it. We're about 4 months in. You know, it's we're about 4 months into this, and I'm already stressing out that I haven't read Tarkin. You know, it's like, oh, Tarkin has been out for a long time, and I haven't even made it through A New Dawn or whatever it's called.
I haven't read Tarkin yet. Well, I haven't read any of them yet.
And they're pretty. It's just like Tarkin and those things may be easier to read because his characters you know. But like say A New Dawn like leads into Rebels, and that's what I find. That's what I love about it. I love all these stories that they're telling and that they're all in continuity. And I love that the comics are picking up right after A New Hope. You know, it's really like. Like, I just never thought, oh, yeah, they should tell a story about how Princess Leia's planet got blown up.
And the way they do it's in Jason Aaron's run in the Star Wars title and in the Darth Vader title. They didn't do it in Princess Leia, but they did it in the other two. The two-page spread Star Wars logo right there.
Yeah.
It hits you right in the face, just like in the movie theater. And you've got the roll-up and, all of it. It's just like the movie. And I think that's going to help. I think that's setting that tone. I don't think Princess Leia is going to do as well. I think Mark Waid's run, however good Mark Waid is as a writer,
I gave it a shot, and I actually enjoyed it way more than I thought I would.
But I don't think it's going to last as long.
I don't know.
I think that'll be the first one to go. It'll be the first one to decline.
I will say that the Darth Vader title is really good. Like, it's really, really
good.
I really enjoyed it.
It's intertwined with the Star Wars title.
Yeah. And was it the first issue where he killed the Sand People? You know, it's just like payback. Like, he's still paying them back. Yeah. And it's really cool. Wow, we're getting off topic on what we're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah, because this is a DC podcast. And that makes me wonder, because we talk about stuff. I'm wondering if we should start doing a Star Wars podcast.
We should probably get in on that.
We'll put a pin in that.
Yeah, put a pin in that one.
Okay, so Supergirl for a second. Rumor is we know that Dean Cain and Helen Slater are going to join the cast. They're in secret roles. The rumor is that they're going to play Kara's foster parents, which means we'll see them a lot more than if they were just like Jor-El and Lara in cameos. They're actually going to be part of the cast. They're mm-hmm. going to be in the show, which I think is cool.
By the way, I think it's just great casting too. You know, I mean, that's just
I
love that they're doing that. You know, I love what the DC television universe has done, where they pay homage to what's come before them.
Yeah, all the show. I mean, The Flash too.
The Flash has set the bar for what they're doing.
The legacy actors showing up are always fun to see. Smallville did
anytime
it.
Anytime you get to see Mark Hamill on screen is a good day.
Oh, I am so looking forward to that. I am so looking forward.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you've watched the promo.
Did you see? Fantastic. You see? Did you see the sizzle reel that came out of the Paley event this weekend?
No, I did not.
We actually see Mark Hamill as Trickster again, but in which one was it? It's the Justice League. It was an animated picture. It's based on a graphic novel where all of Batman's techniques are being used against the Justice League.
Justice League Doom.
Doom. Yes. Doom. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the story element where Flash has the bomb on his wrist, and it'll blow up if he slows down. that's in the tease for the rest of the season. Trickster puts that on Flash. He says, if you get below 600 miles an hour, it'll go boom, run. I mean, and it's so fun to watch Mark Hamill do that.
Yeah.
Because he's back. Yeah. You know, Trickster's back. It's so fun to watch. It's just, you just eat it up with a spoon. And I am so looking forward to that episode that gives us the other universe where John Wesley Shipp is the Flash.
What Earth is that going to be?
I want to see that so badly.
What Earth are they going to claim that to be? Because right now they you know, are saying time travel and everything like that.
Well, it's only a matter of time. Once they introce time travel, it's only a matter of time before they can put the cosmic treadmill in. Yeah. They introduce the multiverse, and then Geoff Johns can sit there and say, all of them are connected.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. I honestly, I think that's where they're going. At least on the television side of things, that is where they're going to go.
Do you think?
Because what's going to happen, you'll end up with this. You will end up with this big event that they will build to, where they cross over everybody.
Do you think the Gotham will be included in that?
That would be awesome. No, the budget, I don't think Gotham's going to last more than the next season.
The budget. Here's what I want to see, Tim. Here is what I want to see happen. Yes, Netflix pays for a 13-episode Crisis on Infinite Earths. Each budget would have to be at least $20 million for each episode.
Yeah.
And you have the cast of everything.
Because I think that if they keep their numbers of shows down to a manageable, say, let's say they get six, let's call it six for right now, all right? So you've got Flash, you've got Arrow, you've got the team-up show, you've got Supergirl, you've got a couple other ones, right? Okay.
Titans and Gotham, that's six.
Tom Welling comes back.
Whatever replaces Gotham.
Right.
And so you've got those, and then you have this thing where they all build, and you've got these tighter casts, these limited things. They're all functioning on TV budgets. So what they do is they're siphoning off a few bucks here and a few bucks there. So when they get to that big event, and then you sit there and go, you know, the miniseries you didn't know you needed. now you know you do.
Hold on. First of all, this is completely unrealistic, everything we're saying. And while we're talking about completely unrealistic, how long before Justice League versus Avengers? How long before the studios say the almighty dollar rules and we must have the Justice League versus the Avengers?
No, it'll be Amalgam Movies. It'll be Amalgam Studios.
JLX.
It's gonna, right? It's just gonna
Wouldn't that be fun? There's your Netflix. I mean, DC would never go for it. Marvel would probably consider it before DC and Warner Brothers would.
Yeah. Oh well. I mean, Marvel is owned by Disney now. So then they sold their soul for the dollar long ago.
Although Disney's leaving them alone. Disney's letting them do it. Say, hey, you're making money. Do it.
Disney did the smartest thing in the world, and they just said, hey, we have all these really smart people who make movies that people want to see.
Yeah.
Let's let them do that.
Yeah, let's leave them
alone.
Let's
go make Frozen 2. Let's let them do their thing.
Yeah. Here's
the thing about Disney, though. They have been around for a very, very long time with a very, very successful model. That really the only time Disney kind of stumbled was the 70s.
Yeah.
Because they kind of turned a lot of their stuff to TV during the 70s. Remember Disney on Sunday nights?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You'd watch.
Loved it.
Okay. But the thing is that, you know, you might get the computer wore tennis shoes. That just dated me really badly. remember when Kurt Russell was young?
Yeah.
But you'd get something like that. But where were the big blockbuster Disney films?
Jeff brought it up too. The late '90s?
The Cat from Outer Space.
Yeah.
Wow, I remember these films really well.
Did Disney do Unidentified Flying Oddball? Was that a Disney picture?
Yeah, that was a Disney.
Yep.
So you have all these stuff, but now you've got. I mean, they had their dark period. Marvel had their dark period. Marvel had the bankruptcy years.
Yeah.
Where there was, you know, the The 90s were bad for DC. The 90s were almost catastrophic for Marvel.
DC. Hence, they don't own the movie rights to Spider-Man.
And they fixed that
because almighty dollar.
Yes, DC hasn't had. Well, I wouldn't say so much the almighty dollar on Marvel's side. I think it was Sony sitting there saying, we can't do it.
Oh, yeah. Sony just said we're screwed.
Disney went to Marvel.
Sony just flat out said, is like, the audience has become savvy enough to where they don't want to see us make a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Because they just know we're going to screw it up.
Yeah, because they keep doing it.
And toss in tons of product placement.
I mean, honestly, I think DC just went through their bad period.
I think they're still going through it. I think Convergence,
they're going to have a hard time.
I don't think they're going to recover from New 52.
I don't either.
I think if they have, if half of the PR spin on Convergence turns out to be true, which good chance it won't be.
Hey, is there anyone among us that's going to be reading the Convergence? I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna buy into Convergence.
I may look at it, but I don't know that I'm gonna read it.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
I'll read it because at this
I'm not
going to
go broke
point,
buying every episode. But
anything they can potentially do to recover from what I consider to be, the train wreck that is the New 52. Potential. But
what bothers me about Convergence is that it's just 2 months, and it's not really the big event that we were waiting, that we were hoping for
it's
the
30th
anniversary. I mean, this is crisis.
It kind of looks they're going back, like from what we've seen from the advanced copiers or whatever it's called, the previews, is it kind of looks like it's going back to status quo. Like, this is literally just an excuse to move their office to the West Coast.
Well, have you seen the hints that Scott Snyder has dropped that the Joker could be immortal?
I went down to do we have an official comic sponsor here locally?
No, we don't.
Okay, I went up to Clint's Comics the other day and I got I picked up the Endgame. Uh-huh. After reading about it and stuff like that, first of all, Scott Snyder is a very good writer.
Yeah,
And this is a very good story he's writing, and this whole Pale Man thing that he's got going, I'm really interested to see where it goes.
Do you think the Joker is immortal?
I think it would be a really neat concept. I think it's a really neat, as opposed to all the other origins we've had to him. I don't dislike it.
I like the Joker's origin being multiple choice.
That would be the preference, but it's like, it's interesting what they're doing. Now, the thing that scares me is by DC saying that they're giving writers the opportunity to write the best story and continuity be damned. That's what they're saying, is they're like, we want them to tell the right stories and not be tied down to 75 years of legacy and 75 years of continuity and all this different stuff. And I guess
certain characters, I think that'll work better than for others.
Maybe I'm just a get off my lawn old man now, but I hate that idea.
They're coming to get you, Kendall.
Yeah, exactly. The DC police are after me now because, I mean, this is the same team that we're allowing, Superman to kill people. So
it's still DiDio and Lee. So no matter what it is, it's going to be flawed.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. I just have to accept. Did you fall?
No. Go ahead.
I just have to kind of accept the fact that we all do.
Our DC is gone.
Yes. Our DC is gone. And instead of complaining about it, I should be so thankful that I had it. Go on and live my life. Yeah. Move on without me, DC. You can keep your $20 a week.
I will say this about that. There is their big thing. Yeah, they're talking about less continuity, more canon, which I find an interesting distinction.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that it means what they think it means. But
I don't think they're using that word right.
thank you. our ideas of canon and continuity and all that stuff are relatively recent in the comic book world.
Right.
you know, we grew up with that. You would all, we, that, that's our experience. But for how many years before that, was it just not, you know, whatever, we don't care. You know, contradictions here, contradictions there, it doesn't matter. And so, and we're writers, so we like the idea of continuity because it helps you tell a story.
Right,
that
right.
Goes to A to B to C to D, and all of a sudden, if you're over here at Q, and you're like, what the hell happened here? But at the same time, their whole big trying to tie everything to continuity, the continuity all together with New 52, was such a mess. And they screwed it up really badly.
Yeah, they really tanked.
What that company needs right now is to step away from that continuity. Now, will they get it right? Probably not. But if they're not going to give us that giant reboot that open up the multiverse and give us back our pre-52, you know, characters back, and have new 52 over here and original continuity over here and whatever other new continuities you want to make over here and here and here, I will grudgingly.
You do nothing
with
happily.
With a great deal of grumbling, take them going, we're not going to be the slaves to the continuity that I don't like.
Yeah, well, there is that.
Plus side, I like Wonder Woman's post-convergence costume that I'm seeing.
Well, it's armor. It's a warrior's costume.
On the downside, I hate Batman's robot rabbit outfit that he's wearing.
Yeah, the robot rabbit.
Any books that
like
I go
the
in and
tick as a robot.
Yeah, books that I ever pick up and stuff, I pick up very little.
Although somebody pointed out the other day in the first image that we got of the robot, that you see red and blue lights on the back of it, and somebody's wondering if maybe that's Gordon in the armor, if that's a police armor rather than Batman. I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to see. All right, that's going to do it for us in this episode. If you have thoughts on Convergence or the New 52 or any of the DC shows, because Flash is coming back soon. You know, Flash is back, Arrow's back the week here that we're recording this. Gotham is still a month out before we get another new episode.
And Flash is going to get good.
Oh, Flash is already good, but it's going to get
better. And we can talk about Power Ring next time.
Yeah, that whole thing with Power Ring and Michelle Rodriguez and all of that. We'll have to spend some time on that because that opens up a completely new can of worms.
Yeah,
and we'll address that.
Yeah, I don't
on
even
the
know
next,
about.
Yeah, well, we'll give Kendall time to research that, and we will look into that. We'll discuss.
Oh, and
that
apparently,
on the next time.
Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith's marriage is fine, and a rumor pops up about their divorce quarterly. So
that's just
bad.
Like
my bad for being a Perez Hilton.
Rumors about.
I feel better now. I feel relieved. I feel as if my night can go on.
All is right with the Smith clan.
That's right, and when all is right with the Smith clan, all is right with the world.
And we will sleep better knowing that Willow will not grow up.
But I tell you what, I actually do want. I want Doc Smith to come back in time, grab Will Smith, and say, "We got to do something about your kid."
You mean Doc Brown? So, okay, so that's going to do it for us. If you have a comment, like I said, if you have a comment, you can leave it on the post or you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, and let us know what you think about any of the DC filmed media, whether it's the movies or the TV shows. You can comment on the New 52 and Convergence and Multiversity and all of the other good stuff that's out there, or the bad stuff, depending on how you look at it. You know, everything depends on our point of view, right? All right, that's going to do it for us. Sci-Fi for Me is on all the social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr, and the Facebook. And our podcasts, of course, are available over on iTunes. And if you've got an Android device, you can find us using the Double Twist or the OneCast apps. And the latest news, as always, we post on a fairly consistent basis. We try to put new stuff up daily on our main site, which is scififorme.com. Jeff Hackworth, Tim Harvey, Kendall Sen, Thanks very much for joining us here, and thank you for listening to this edition of the Rogues Gallery, and we will be back with another episode soon.
See you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.